Welcome to the Post Game Plan. My name is Ali Samani, and I am your host. This is the career development hub for all current as well as former NBA players. And today we have a very special guest. His name is James Donaldson. He is an American basketball player. He actually grew up in England, actually was born in England, grew up in California, played 14 seasons in the National Basketball Association, went to Washington State University, and got drafted by the Seattle Supersonics, as well played for the San Diego Clippers at the time, now the Los Angeles Clippers, and also played with the Dallas Mavericks, among other teams, and had brief stints with the New York Knicks. We're very happy to have him. He's a former NBA All-Star and was a part of the team that actually went to the finals, Western Conference Finals, losing to the Los Angeles Lakers, I believe in 1988. I'm really happy to have him. He spent a lot of time abroad as well, so I'm definitely going to get a lot of insight as to how someone can navigate their way through their career beyond basketball. And he's done a lot of work both in physical therapy, upon retiring from the NBA, and has joined the College Success Foundation as the director. So we're very happy to have him. James, how are you doing today?
Ali, I'm doing very good. How are you this morning and all your listeners out there?
Very well, very well. So happy to have you. I mean, with such a long career in the NBA, I know you retired in 1995. I think there's a lot of information that you could hopefully provide to our listeners. And I say that because, you know, 1995 is not too long ago. And I think a lot of the things that a lot of these players that are kind of encountering in terms of the decision making that they have to choose between various investments that they make, various decisions that they make, even playing abroad, I think your experiences are really going to help some of our listeners as they navigate their way through their career. So I'm really excited about this interview. And just to get started right off the bat, I'd love to hear about your experience at Washington State University. How many years did you complete there?
Well, thank you. I actually attended Washington State University back in the mid to late 70s. So I went and did all four undergraduate years there at Washington State. This is in Pullman, Washington, over on the eastern side of the state of Washington. And I graduated in 1979 with a degree in sociology, psychology, and fully expecting to go into the world of counseling and youth counseling and social work and those kind of things. But lo and behold, you know, the NBA came knocking and drafted me onto the Seattle Supersonics in 79, and my life took a different turn. But, you know, I just tried to make the best of it every which way I go.
Wow. So that's definitely a good knock to have.
it's nice to have a backup plan no matter what happens to you in life.
No, you're absolutely right. So you said you completed your degree in sociology and psychology. Is that correct?
Yes, I did. Yes,
okay.
I did.
So you completed all 4 years prior to going into the NBA, which is fantastic. Yeah. Now, could you tell me a little bit about, you know, going into the league? Do you think that played a role in the way you were able to communicate with other teammates and the way you were able to absorb various information and absorb the opportunity that you had?
I really believe so, and I still believe so even to today and today's athletes, student athletes coming out of high school and coming out of college. I think the more years of experience that you can have under your belt, be it on a college campus or a year or two removed from high school, the better suited you are, the better prepared you are to go into the rough and tumble world of professional athletes, professional athletics, or corporate America, or whatever it is you're going to do. You can't put a price tag on experience. And I urge all student athletes that unless they have a multi-year guaranteed contract that dangling right in front of them that they're ready to sign, get your college degree and have that as your backup plan. At the same time, pursue your athletic career if that's what you so choose to do.
Okay. Now, 14 years in the NBA is quite, you know, a unique opportunity. I mean, not a lot of players get to have such a long, extended career. And I mean, the average career span in the NBA is about 5 years, so you far exceeded that definitely. And you know, tell me a little bit about how you kind of remained and continue to remain relevant as you were going through your NBA career, going from a from a young athlete standpoint to maybe a more mentor type of role in your later years?
Well, exactly. You know, and I broke in with the Seattle Supersonics back in 1980, which was actually my first year, even though I was drafted in 1979. My first year, I actually went overseas to Italy and played a year in the European professional leagues in 1979 and 80, preparing for the NBA. And this is one of my messages to a lot of our younger generation and our student athletes out there, is sometimes you have to delay your desire to have immediate gratification. To have everything happen right here, right now, just exactly how you want it, when you want it. Sometimes you do have to take a detour, a slight detour in life. And I took that detour. Even though I didn't really want to go to the Italian leagues, I went there. I was able to get a whole bunch of experience playing full-time and developing into a better professional athlete. And then when I came back to the NBA, I was ready to go. And also, one of the reasons I went there was because the Sonics had just won the world championship in 1979. They had a roster full of championship caliber players, Jack Sikma and Lonnie Shelton and Gus Williams and downtown Freddie Brown and John Johnson. Great, great players all the way around, coached by Hall of Fame coach and Hall of Fame player Lenny Wilkins. So there was no room on the team for a young up-and-comer like me. They had guaranteed contracts from 1 through 12. So there was no way I was going to break into that lineup. So you have to be realistic when you pursue your goals and when you put your plans in place. So when I did come to the Sonics the next year, my first year in the NBA, I was better prepared. I was a little more seasoned. I was welcomed onto the team as I fought and won my spot onto the team by a great group of mentors. And all the guys I mentioned previously became terrific mentors of mine, took me under their wing and really helped me develop into the NBA player that I would become. I didn't play much my rookie year, started playing a whole bunch more my sophomore or second year and third year with the Sonics before being traded off to the San Diego Clippers. So that's how my career began. And again, the nugget of information or insight to take out of that is sometimes you have to take a little detour or delay your instant desire to have instant gratification while still pursuing your dream with the same passion and ferocity that it takes to accomplish your dream.
And how was your, you know, just to backtrack a little bit, how was your experience playing in Italy? And yeah, I just out of, you know, general interest, because that's a route that not a lot of players take. I know Brandon Jennings most recently played abroad one year after high school. And how was that experience? And at that age, how did you internalize it?
Well, as most young people at that age, I went over there kicking and screaming and not wanting to go. But once I got there and I realized that, you know, this is going to be a really good situation, I made the best of the situation. There's the old saying of making lemonade out of lemons. And even though it wasn't what I really wanted to do, I was going to make the best of the situation. So I played full-time for the season. I tried to put up, you know, as best numbers as I could, rebounding, the blocking shots, and scoring and things like that, helping my team to win. But also the additional pieces that still are very valuable to me to this day are that I made long and lasting friendships that are, you know, 30 years ago, and still great friends. I learned to speak Italian when I was there. I learned the Italian culture and histories and the magnificent cathedrals and plazas. So I said, hey, I'm going to dive in. If I'm going to be here, I'm going to dive in full-fledged and really make the best of the situation. And that's what I chose to do that very first year coming out of Washington State. But also later in my career when I returned to Europe and played in Spain and Greece also.
That's definitely a great attitude to have no matter what kind of transpires. Even for, you know, aspiring college player electing to go abroad, you really have to take advantage of the opportunity, because in the end it's the friendships that you make that are going to help drive your success potentially later on in life. Now, tapping into, you know, your career, your 14-year career in the NBA, when do you think you started considering, you know, opportunities after retirement, or I guess life after basketball? When do you think that point came?
Well, I was happy and fortunate to have a college degree when I went into the NBA.
Right.
This is one of the things I continue to work on to this day. Less than 20% of our NBA guys have a college degree. That number is probably going to plummet to less than 10% in the next 5 or 6 or 7 years. And that's
right.
A very unfortunate, detrimental thing for young people to be burdened with. But I had a college degree when I went into the NBA. And I knew kind of what I wanted to do after the NBA was over, but I wanted to make sure I played as long as I possibly could. As a matter of fact, I tell the story in my book that I wrote this year, Standing Above the Crowd, that I had a vision. I had a goal that I wanted to be one of the very first guys to ever play until he was 40 years old. And so I kept pushing and pushing and playing and playing, and I played 14 years in the NBA and then 6 years overseas. So I had a 20-year career and played until I was 42 years of age.
Wow.
But, yeah, right. But in the middle of that career, right when I was about 32 years of age, I had a very, very devastating knee injury when I was playing with the Dallas Mavericks. Ruptured patella tendon that put me flat on my back for about 8 or 9 months. And during that time, I had plenty of time to think about, okay, if I can't come back and play, and I'm falling way short of my goal of playing until I'm 40, what am I going to do? I really wasn't ready to take on a classroom full of young people and do my counseling and teaching and working with young folks like I was, you know, trained to do and I had a degree in. And so at that moment, I had what I call a light bulb moment, and that was being surrounded by all these wonderful physical therapists and athletic trainers and massage therapists and nutritionalists and doctors who put me back together again from a very devastating knee injury. It hit me like a ton of bricks one day that said, hey, I got it. I want to go into the world of physical therapy. I want to study physical therapy. I want to start up a physical therapy business. I want to help people who go through these devastating kind of life situations like I'm going through. And so at that point, when I was 32, I realized exactly what I wanted to do once I was finished with my NBA career. I was blessed enough to come back and play another 10 years, but I started up my physical therapy business right around that same time when I was injured and out for 8 or 9 months, called the Donaldson Clinic up here in Seattle area. And now we're, this coming in January 2012, we'll be celebrating our 22nd year.
Wow, congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So how do you think that, you know, you're very fortunate. That 8 or 9 months, I kind of want to divulge into that a little bit, just because I know that for an athlete to be sidelined for 8 or 9 months can be so devastating, especially with the competitive spirit that most athletes have. How are you able to handle it? Do you think it was through the support system of the physiotherapist that you were working with, you were able to get through that?
That was helpful. But, you know, there's no denying the fact that it was a very, very difficult 8 or 9 months. I was traumatized. I was in pain, physical pain, mental anguish, uncertainty about my future. Doctors were doom and gloom about whether I'd ever not only play again, but ever, you know, walk normally without a limp. And, the prognosis just wasn't very good at that time. And those kind of times, though, that's when you have to really pull your support system around you, friends who truly care about you. Again, I write in my book about all these so-called friends I had and all these fans that used to hang out with me as a Dallas Maverick. They all disappeared. You know, when I was no longer able to invite them to the Maverick games and give them comp tickets and sit up there and watch us play, they disappeared in a hurry. And so I really had my inner circle, my intimate circle of good friends, and good family members who truly cared about me to help pull me through the very difficult situation I was going through. Of course, it was great to be around a physical therapist because part of their job is to encourage and inspire you to feel that you can get better and then to help you physically get better. But emotionally, you still go through your depression, your devastated state of mind, your uncertainty, your lack of confidence. And again, I write about a lot of these experiences in my book, where there was a young girl who was going through physical therapy about the same time with me. And she was about 12 or 14 years of age, and she had a skiing accident injury, and she ruined her knee or wrecked her knee and went through therapy a couple, 2 weeks before me. So she's in there, and she's 2 or 3 weeks ahead of me and making some good progress, and she sees me really struggling to even lift a 2.5-pound ankle weight. You know, here I go from being one of the biggest, strongest, toughest NBA guys to somebody flat on my back, and I can barely lift 2.5 pounds. So she used to turn to me and inspire me every day that, you know, you can do it. You can do it. You know, look at me. I'm doing 5 pounds, and you can do it. And so those kind of things really help you get through the difficult times. And I have a tremendous amount of faith. You know, I've got a great sense of my spiritual walk and my faith walk with God, and that helped me through a lot of those things too.
Right. Wow. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, after retirement. Now, you retired at the age of 42, you said, right?
Yes, from NBA and European basketball, yes.
And European basketball. So, you know, while... After, upon retiring, I'm assuming you started working right away with the Donaldson Clinic and started to grow that business and zero in on what you were doing there. Is that correct?
I did. I jumped into the Donaldson Clinic full time at that point. It was already 10 years matured, and I was basically operating and managing from a distance, even from overseas, working with my managers and keeping everything moving along. So I jumped into it full time around the year 2000. And we expanded our locations from the one location we have now in Mill Creek to 4 or 5 other locations around the Seattle area. And part of my role and job and responsibility was to become a member and a fixture in the various communities in which we would have our physical therapy clinics. So we served a couple of the suburban neighborhoods. We served a couple of the inner city urban areas where my personal passion was to be able to give back to disadvantaged neighborhoods and to have a professional service business in the neighborhood. One was the Hilltop in Tacoma, which is a very, very challenged, disadvantaged neighborhood. And the other one was in the central area of Seattle. So to be able to have business locations there and hire from the community, create jobs, be a positive role model and mentor, that was really what I enjoyed doing and still enjoy doing.
And in regards to managing your business from a distance, was that challenging, and how did you pick your business partners?
Well, yes, it is challenging, but you have to be have a good team around you. And I have been fortunate to have a great team of folks from the beginning. Matter of fact, my operations manager, she always corrects me, is Rosemary Bennett, B-E-N-T-T-S, Bennett. And so she's been with me all 22 years from the very, very beginning. So she's one of the managers. She manages the day-to-day operations of the business. And even when I was playing professional basketball and would be gone 8 or 9 months a year, I could still count on her through a weekly phone call, conference call, and emails to keep things going and keep everything on track for me. So you have to be surrounded by a great team of people, and Rosemary Bennett is my MVP of our team that we have.
Definitely. Now, I see here that you ran for the position of Seattle mayor in 2009.
Yes.
That's a fantastic, you know, opportunity and, you know, a very courageous thing to do. How did you come about determining that you wanted to do this, and what inspired you?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, some of my locations at the physical therapy clinic were in the disadvantaged neighborhoods of Seattle and Tacoma. And this was all through, you know, the early 2000s, 2005 and 2006. And in 2008, I decided to run for the office of mayor here in Seattle. This was just the beginning of the economic downturn that we're all continuing to go through.
Right.
I decided to close the locations in the disadvantaged neighborhoods that we were in, because of the economic downturn. And I just made the decision that I could serve these communities that I love so much and so passionate about even better from downtown at City Hall. And I was given a chance at that point to meet a lot of influential community leaders and political leaders around the area. And so I made the decision then to run for the office of mayor, to roll up my sleeves and really get involved with what makes a city tick, what makes a city run. And with that, being able to create even better opportunities for some of the disadvantaged neighborhoods.
And what are you doing today in terms of your daily activities or the organizations that you're involved in?
Well, my daily activities consist of I continue to work out every day and stay physically fit, which is, I think, something that a lot of our athletes tend to get away from once they retire. They need to stay fit. They need to take care of the bodies that have gotten them so far in life. So my day begins 5:30, 6 o'clock every morning in the gym, working out for a couple hours. I come back home to my home office, and I work on my speaking engagements. I'm a professional keynote speaker. I work on my book and marketing and promoting of the book, Standing Above the Crowd, and our website, which is standingabovethecrowd.com. And I want to take this platform to a national and international level of speaking and selling books. We'll be putting the book into Mandarin Chinese pretty soon, into Spanish, into Arabic, and I'll be traveling to those countries to do those kind of speaking engagements also. I have still almost day-to-day operations with the Donaldson Clinic, but again, I run most of that through our managers, and they continue to take care of the actual detailed day-to-day aspects of it. And then I work very closely with our NBA retired players. I'm a board member with the National Basketball Retired Players Association, and I've been a board member for a couple of years. So we work in that regard to try to help out with the NBA retired players as they make that transition from their playing days into real and everyday life.
Right. So in regards to your speaking kind of engagement business, when did you start that, and how big is it today?
You know, I've always spoke in some regard, and I'm so grateful as I look back now, back in my Washington State days, where I had one of my assistant coaches really encourage me to take a public speaking course. And of course, like most young people, I was real shy and embarrassed and introverted a little bit and unsure of myself. And I'd get up there and try to speak to the classroom, and I'd be looking out their windows off to the side or never making eye contact with the audience in the classroom. So I remember those real early beginnings of learning how to speak in public. But now I speak all around the world, and I just really enjoy it. What I feel is a great message to our younger generation about making great choices in life, about setting goals, having a success strategy, and staying on track, and resisting peer pressure and overcoming negativity. I talk about these things all the time. I speak also to a lot of business organizations, especially in regards to small business entrepreneurship, because here we are going into our 22nd year, yet the average small business goes in and out of business in 2.5 years.
Right.
So you have to have a plan. You have to have a vision. You have to have a game plan. You have to have a team. And you have to stay involved and continue to move forward to grow and to be successful. So my speaking engagements have gone on throughout the country, every city that I've ever played in and every city that I travel to even now. But now we're taking it even more globally and more internationally, as I'll be heading over to Asia and China next week for the rest of the year, and working in regards to putting the book into Mandarin Chinese and speaking to corporate China, corporate Asia, heading over to the Middle East, probably in January, February, and again, putting the book in Arabic language, speaking to a lot of folks in Saudi Arabia and Dubai and Qatar and all the other areas around the Middle East region. So that's where I'm at. But at the same time, helping to create opportunities for other former NBA players to do likewise.
Exactly. Now, do you have an agency that helps you out with this, or are these all relationships that you've built to go to Asia, to go to the Middle East?
Yes. A lot of it is relationships that I've been building over the year, over the years. So as I go about, you know, again, this is one of the things that we encourage our guys to do is to network. You know, in our playing days, we're surrounded by tons and tons of people that many times they're there for their own personal agendas, and we forget about what we could possibly, you know, reciprocally get out of those arrangements, those relationships. So it's important for our guys to learn how to network with the people who surround them, and then to have relationships that they can have once their playing days are over. Ali, let me tell you, a couple of reasons I got involved with the board on the Retired Players Association is, one, like I said, less than 20% of the guys have a college degree.
Right.
And that's very distressing. And where are you going to go in life with a high school degree when you're 30, 35, 40 years of age? It's going to be a challenge. Two, the average career is only 3 years. So a lot of guys come into the league at 20, 21. If they go to college, maybe they come in the league at 18, 19, if they don't go to college. In either regard, they're done by their early 20s. By 25 on average, they're done with the NBA. They may chase the basketball around the globe for a few more years, but they're done with the NBA on average. Three, over 90% of our guys, 90% of the guys go through a divorce within 5 years after retirement. So he's in the league at 20, he's retired at 25, he's divorced at 30, and by the time he's 40, most of all he's worked so hard for financially is gone. See? And that's the trend line of most of our NBA retired players, and NFL retired players too, but we're talking NBA right now. So that's one of the reasons I'm involved with our board, to help create opportunities, to help create job training programs, to help create internships and externships in corporate America, to help guys speak in public, to help guys network and build off the platform that they have as far as being a professional athlete.
And when you encourage other players or retired players, I mean, a lot of them have great stories that you know could be shared by many, and many could seek inspiration from these stories. So when they're looking to write a book, what would you suggest? You know, I've encountered a number of players and I've interviewed a number of players that have such fantastic stories, and many of which talk about the idea of wanting to write a book. Now, would you say self-publishing or getting a publisher to help you it would be a better idea?
Well, you have a couple of different avenues. If you're a name, household name brand, Shaquille O'Neal just came out with a book. Magic Johnson comes out with books at kind of time. Charles Barkley. Okay, those are household names that publishing companies will gladly get on board with and give you, you know, the money to start up your publication. They'll publish it for you. They'll print up 10, 20, 50,000, 100,000 copies, and they'll give you a royalty off of that. That's one route to go. But that's very few and far between for most of us. Most of the rest of us, including myself, are self-published authors. So we go through the self-publishing routes, and we're getting speaking engagements, we're getting in front of the audiences, we're selling books at different venues that we go to, and we continue to just create this and market this as a business of our own. Okay, it's still very rewarding and could be very lucrative, depending on the speaking engagements that you put together. But it requires a little more work, okay? And I tell the guys, I say, hey, guys, you're used to hard work. Look at all the hours you put on the basketball court or the football field or the baseball diamond. Come on, you're used to working, so let's work. So it just depends on the avenue or the platform you have to work with is the route that you need to go as far as the world of publishing. And I'd be more than happy to help out anybody out there in that regard. To give them some advice or tidbits on what I did to make it work for me.
That's fantastic. This has been, you know, it's been a great interview, and it's really rare that we get to really speak to both an author, a motivational speaker, as well as an individual that's built a business. And congratulations on it being established for 22 years, which is just a fantastic achievement in itself. And
thank
I think,
you.
Yeah.
Well, and as we go about this, we already are planning our 25th anniversary, our 30th anniversary, our 35th anniversary. This is how it's done. You've got to have a vision. You've got to have a goal. You've got to have a game plan. You've got to have a team.
Exactly. Now, you know, at the end of each show, we really like to have kind of a pay it forward type of moment where our speaker or our guest gets an opportunity to speak to some of the aspiring professionals that are out there, as well as some of the current players that are out there, about some of the key ingredients which can help contribute towards a successful career beyond the game. So I'd love to open the kind of mic up to you and get an opportunity to speak to those individuals.
Thank you. You know, my 2 cents worth or my advice would be, you know, guys and gals, professional women, basketball players and the like, go through a lot of the same challenges and trying to figure out what they want to do after their professional careers are over. So I say, athletes, it's never too early to start planning for your future. As what happened to me when I blew out my knee at 32 years of age and not very certain about what I wanted to do next, it was probably the best thing that could have happened because it sidetracked me for 8 or 9 months. It helped me to figure out what I want to do next, and it helped me to realize and not take for granted what I had right in front of me, a wonderful opportunity to be a professional athlete. So we have wonderful opportunities to be professional athletes. I say reach out to your network, find mentors who can help guide you through the rest of your professional career and help plan for your post-professional career. Find something that you're as passionate about as you are about the sport that you love to play and that you're so good at. Make sure that you implement a lot of the same things that you learned from being an athlete. Teamwork, hard work, ambition, goal setting, vision, drive, success strategy, a game plan, and a game plan that you execute to near perfection. Those are all the things that you're going to need and it's going to take for you to be a success once you hang up your sneakers or your spikes or your cleats or whatever it is you're wearing. So really, do the best you can. And you've got all of the wonderful attributes it takes to be a success. You're already a success because you're a professional athlete or a college athlete. But the next level and the real challenges come when real life is something that you have to tackle on a day-to-day basis. So you can do it. And that's my encouragement to each and every one of the listeners out there today.
A great message from a great guest. James, I really want to thank you for this, for putting aside time and the opportunity to speak to you and speaking to our audience. I know that they definitely got an opportunity to benefit from all the words of wisdom that you have, and we wish you continued success, both on your speaking engagements, success with your book, as well as your business. The number of things that you're doing are really a true true role model-esque for a professional athlete, and we hope that many follow within in your footsteps. And definitely,
thank
if there
you.
Are...
Well,
yeah.
And I want to avail myself to anybody who wants to contact me and ask about any of the things I've done or how I could help them through my website, standingabovethecrowd.com. And you'll see my link to my email, and it comes directly to me and nobody else. So I'd love to engage in a one-to-one mentoring relationship with you to help you out as best I can.
How fantastic. I was just about to say that. So that's great. Thank you for offering, you know, a little piece of advice, as well as the opportunity to connect with other individuals that are out there. So everyone that's listening, definitely take advantage of the opportunity, and we wish you continued success. Thank you so much for your time, James, and I hope everyone enjoyed this interview.
Thank you very much, Ali. All your listeners out there, happy holidays. Thank you.
All right. Take care, James.
All right. Bye.